Welcome back to Following Noadama Stormlight Podcast. This week is episode 194, and we are concluding The Alloy of Law. Elliot, how are you?
I'm doing great. Another book finished, another notch in the belt, another very entertaining story. I'm also excited because despite this book being rather lighthearted, a little more fun, I've got a lore deep dive for you guys, and I'm going to read quotes from not one, not two, but three Mistborn Era 1 books. Buckle up.
Does that include Secret History or
no?
Not? So the original three Mistborn books. Okay.
Paul, how are you? Hey, you're pretty maxed out there. There's only three books, so if we were doing trivia on that, I think I could get them. I'm doing really good. It feels like I finished a book, but like lengthwise, it doesn't feel like I finished a book. This was so quick. You know, we ran straight through this book, and it was beautiful. So, yeah, excited to talk through the end of this with y'all.
I believe the next book will be 6 episodes instead of 4. I think, if I mapped it out correctly. So we will roll intro, and then we'll get a brief summary from them. All right, Elliot, how does The Alloy of Law end?
Well, it's pretty action-packed, so I'm going to have to go kind of quick through some of these sections. But it starts in Chapter 16 with Wayne impersonating an old woman and a lengthy con attempt that ultimately results in Wax getting locked into this brand-new House Tekiel Breakknot, the unbreakable train car that they're going to transport all of their aluminum in, I guess. But that was the whole goal. They were just trying to get Wax into the train car so that he would be able to face the bad guys, the Vanishers, when they try to steal the train car. Chapter 17, the Vanishers steal the train car with a rather fascinating setup of a fake Phantom rail car and a crane on a barge, which is pretty cool. I actually do want to talk about that for a little bit. They steal a train car. They take it back to their lair. Miles is a smart dude, so he knows that Wax is already in. They winch the door off of the massive impenetrable train car, and chaos ensues. We then get about 3 chapters straight, 2 long chapters straight of action, battle, back and forth. Wayne's popping speed bubbles everywhere. Wax is shooting bullets and pulling Robin Hood with bullets on other bullets. And Marcy is sniping folks from here and there. Wax fights the 2 Allomancers push and pull up and down the skyscraper, flying through the air. People are getting shot. Miles gets trapped in a bunch of nets, detonates dynamite in his hand because he can survive that kind of thing to bust out of the nets. It just all goes kind of crazy. Wax pauses in the middle of it all to just casually have a conversation with Harmony, because, you know, you can do that, I guess, when you've got your earring in the middle of battle. But ultimately, Wax does save Steris, gets her to safety. They're able to use Marcy's power of all things in order to distract Miles long enough to bring in all of the constables to pile on top of him and save the day. And then there's a bit of analysis at the end of what happened and where we're going from there, but I'll save that for us to kind of dissect, because I'd be willing to bet we're going to spend half of this episode on the epilogue.
Yes. The infamous Alloy of Law epilogue. Okay. Elliot, I have a physics question for you.
Oh, dear.
You have in the outline, Wax pulls a Robin Hood with bullets. Question. Am I incorrect in assuming that the second bullet he fires would never catch up to the first one?
I thought about that in the scene. So the scene in question has a lot of various physics coming into play. And I kind of just got to the point where I was like, you know what? I'm just not going to think about this too hard. It might be feasible. It might not.
Maybe that's better.
I think the answer to your question, though, I do recall it specifically being pointed out that he pushes on the second bullet.
Okay.
I think that's how that's possible. Is he shoots the first one. It passes through the speed barrier, which then pushes it like in a random direction. He has to then kind of judge that new random direction to try and hit it with the second one. After Wayne drops the speed barrier, he pushes on it so that it goes faster. It knocks the other bullet onto the first bullet onto a new trajectory that goes around Marcy and hits the Koloss dude behind her. Yeah, maybe feasible. I don't know.
Okay, the more you're explaining it, the more epic it is in my head, because I kind of brushed past that scene. But now that you're explaining it, pushing the second bullet into the first,
mm-hmm.
In order for it to ricochet around Marcy, I mean, that is pretty cool. Did you catch it on the first time, or did you need Elliot to explain it, Paul?
Elliot's explanation was exceptionally helpful. I did get this, but I guess it didn't. I just read through this once. I did not reread. I have not reread these chapters so far, so it didn't quite stick out to me. I also never thought of the logic of, you know, how does your second bullet hit the first bullet? You know, how does that happen?
Right.
Which is a good point. So I feel like I'm sure it does say that he pushed, like he was pushing the second bullet to do so, which completely answers that question. But I'm baffled by the, I guess, precision required for this, the supernatural precision required for that. And, you know, angles are tricky. I mean, that you know, I don't know how you figure that one out or calculate that. Was there any mention that he's ever tried anything like this before? It does mention that Wax is like, or that these guys are like the best shots, you know, like they're excellent, you know, marksmen, but I mean, this is quite a feat.
I think it's from last episode chapters. Did you guys catch Wax's Nate, like title that the newspapers have given him?
I don't think I did.
They call him Waxillium Dawnshot is the title they give him, which
it's a good title.
It's pretty epic. Okay, so we take down the Vanishers, right? In their big long extended fight scene. I did really enjoy the Marcy reveal, because Paul, like you talked about last week, it is fairly tropey that find out you have a secret power, but it's not super useful. And then, oh, at the end of the book, it turns out to be useful. But this one still worked for me. Like, even though that's pretty well established, I don't know why I didn't see this coming on my first read, but this one did take me by surprise that they were just sitting inside a slow bubble for probably like 2 hours of real time or whatever for the constables to get there.
It wasn't too surprising for me, but I didn't anticipate it. It felt very logical and quite clever that the heroes, I like that they didn't just come up with it on the spot. That would have felt a little convenient. But the fact that they planned it out makes perfect sense. They're sitting there thinking, man, Miles has a lot of powers. What do we have in our arsenal that he's not going to suspect that we can use against him? Well, Marcy's got this unique power that no one thinks is useful. How could we use that? And then they had to kind of logic out, well, it's kind of limited. If you just pop that bubble and one of his cronies is outside, they're just going to realize it and shoot you. So that won't work. So they knew they had to take care of every single one of his henchmen and then pop the bubble while keeping him distracted so that he doesn't realize he's in the bubble to give Wayne enough time to go get the help. Like, all the pieces fell into place for me. It was quite clever, I thought.
The fact that Miles can, like, self-injure to get out of traps. Like that wasn't their first plan, right? The first plan was tie him up with a bunch of rope, right? Yeah. And one of Miles's monologues is, oh, you should have talked to the criminals out in the roughs because they tried that too. And then Wax comes back with, you shot them all in the head. How could I have asked any of your criminals on how to beat you? But yeah, so he blows himself up to get the fishing net off of himself. So yeah, I did think it was pretty cool that they had two distinct plans, and one of them included Marcy, so she wasn't just, you know, here along for the ride.
It also continued Marcy's development quite significantly from being someone who's intentionally trying to hide in the shadows and not be noticed and not talk to people because she's a bit of an embarrassment and not really supposed to be here, to key pivotal role in taking down an immortal bad guy all the way then until kind of the next step after that of the scenes in the, is it in the epilogue where she's watching, it is, Miles be executed and the mental, I don't know, damage, whatever, the processing she's doing as she's watching him be executed. She goes all the way almost beyond matured to, oh man, she's gonna have scars coming out of this.
Sure. Is Marcy our most improved player for the book?
Yeah,
I would say so. Yeah, you know, I think that's a good question. I think she is. I will say that, I mean, there are limited numbers of characters in this story, so it's not like super major, but it's a character that has definitely been invested in here and that we get to see a lot with. So I'm hoping as we move on to future books that we do get to continue to see a lot more of Marcy. I think would be awesome. Yeah. I think you could definitely say that she's the most improved.
Well, how did you guys feel about the crush that she had on Wax for the whole book and then is kind of like snuffed out at the end by Wax?
Well, I don't know if snuffed out is the right word. I wrote in my notes with a question mark, incoming love triangle for book two.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That is, to me, it feels like this is the character that, you know, us, the viewer, you know, knows that is the right, it feels like the right fit for Wax, where Steris is like the I guess the pre-existing, I don't know, thing. Like, I think of any Hallmark movie ever, it feels kind of like that to me, where it's like in my head I'm rooting for Marcy, but because he mentions at the end, he mentions like, oh, if I was younger, or not necessarily age, but like if I was less, I guess, jaded or hurt from my past,
right,
you know, she'd be a great, you know, companion. And so definitely seems legitimate.
And referencing Mistborn Era 1, back to Breeze and Alrian, if I had a quarter for every time a elderly Ladrian gentleman had a much younger love interest girl on his arm for a book, I'd have two quarters, which, you know, isn't a lot, but it's weird that it happened twice, right?
It's starting a pattern, apparently.
Unless I guess if Sisabron's a Ladrian, then maybe I have three quarters.
Oh,
there's a theory for you.
That was a Warbreaker reference where I was not expecting a Warbreaker reference.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Warbreaker this episode.
Wow, okay.
The whole love triangle thing with Marcy is, for me, not helped at all by the fact that Steris is just so awkward.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In a blunt and in-your-face kind of way. Marcy's awkward because she's unsure of herself, she's naive, she's embarrassed. Steris is awkward because she has a schedule for romance and is just so blunt about everything. And so I actually want to try and root for Steris. In some ways, she seems like she would be a better match for Wax, just in maybe larger goals or station in life or where they're trying to get to. But man, I really don't like her so far. I'm hoping to see more of her in a future book so I can form a better opinion. But in the brief amount of time we've spent with Steris, the cringe is hard.
This is true. I think she's been in 3 chapters total in this book, and all 3 of them she's not only like not scored any points, but awkwardly got negative points.
Like, that's the kind of person in real life that I actively avoid. I don't want to be in conversations because they're going to say directly, bluntly, awkward stuff to me all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
No thanks.
This is my segment where I just, you know, relate everything that we're reading to other stories and other, you know, things that exist. And I think of like Angela and Dwight's relationship from The Office. If anyone listening has watched The Office, also oddly enough, Pride and Prejudice. If anyone's watched Pride and Prejudice, I think of oh gosh, what's his name? There's like the male character who just is this like awkward, blunt, unflattering. Like, you know, he's at heart, he's a good guy. Oh, I feel bad.
I can't remember
the name. Mr.
You're not talking about Mr. Darcy, are you?
No, not Mr. Darcy. He's like the main
Mr. Collins. You
know, yes, Mr. Collins. That's what I'm thinking of. Yes, I'm thinking of Mr. Collins. Where Mr. Collins is like, you know, deep down, he's a nice, good guy. You know, he means no ill will, but he's just so awkward and,
yep,
you know, unfortunately awkward and blunt and, you know, those are the characters that I keep thinking of as I think of Steris, which is kind of unfortunate for Steris. So I agree. I hope to see more. I hope to, you know, for that to be debunked from my brain. I hope for her to come around maybe a bit more. But right now she's pretty cringy to watch, to listen to.
So we get the end of Miles in this episode, or at least, I mean, Elliot, you've kind of jaded me on Miss Monero 1 when you were like, I'm not even sure if this character's dead. Because the entire epilogue, or the entire like last couple chapters of this book, are you can't kill Miles, you can't kill Miles, you can't kill Miles. Even if you shoot him with a firing squad, you can't kill Miles. And then he's finally dead. Or is he? Right? Like,
yeah.
He got shot in the head, but we've seen him on screen. That's happened, and he hasn't cared. But it says he deliberately didn't heal from it. And from Marisie's perspective, she says he's dead. Are you guys convinced?
I think I am. I think he's dead. There's enough evidence there to point me to the fact that he truly is, and that we're not going to see some kind of bait and switch out of this, although perhaps. It also just feels like closure in a way for this character.
Right.
He's planted the seed. The character accomplished what the character was intended to accomplish, which was to pull Wax back into the action, make Wax doubt his motives, you know, make Wax realize he's a lot more similar to Miles than he might want to be. He has driven Marisie to exposure to the world, and now maybe scarred her emotionally through what he says. And he's thrown out this cliffhanger of Trell is coming,
yep,
which is now a good hook to lead us into the next book. So looking at the meta of the book series, it feels like the right time for him to be dead, if that makes any sense.
It does. And like, I also think he's dead, my previous knowledge aside. But I would have felt better about it if one of the like executioner guards had, you know, taken out a saber and decapitated him, right? Like, which notably doesn't happen. They shoot him a bunch and then he dies. But we've already seen him take a bunch of bullets. I would have liked to see a more conclusive death, but I do think he's dead.
We are jaded, aren't we, from previous experience?
I guess so.
The dialogue between Miles and Wax, I think right before, or maybe in the speed bubble, as Wax is trying to divert Miles' attention, Wax has an inner thought of, if Miles had been born back in the Final Empire, he would have been a hero. Or he's trying to invoke the quote-unquote survivor's mandate. And I'm going to do the most good for the most people, even if that means killing people and maybe some innocent people. That's kind of Kelsier's thing, right? So what did you guys think of that phrase besides, and I have a thought on it, but if Miles had been born back in the Final Empire, he'd have been a hero.
This got my brain spinning up to full speed for sure. In some ways, yes. At the level of maybe motive, I think his general actions of the system is corrupt, I need to bring it down, I'm going to have to kill people along the way, and it's going to be messy. That could be used to describe Kelsier and our heroes, even Vin and Ellen at times, in the first era. It falls apart for me, though, that term hero, when you look at the methods. The things that Miles does, like kidnapping women, that I don't think our heroes from the first book would have done. Right. Is it similar? Can you have the conversation about comparison? Yeah, I think so. It's an important thing to talk about, and in my mind says more about Mistborn Era 1 than it does about Miles. The heroes in that book do some dark things. They're faced with a very dark time. Ruin is wrecking the entire world, systematically torturing and pulling the people and the world apart piece by piece. They're at rock bottom. That's not true of Mistborn Era 2. We're in a much more civilized setting. Now, there's still a lot of evil going on. There's corruption and all that. So the motive may be passable. The methods, definitely not.
I agree. And Wax mentions it specifically in his conversations with Miles at some point, right? Of like, we are now in a, you know, more high society. We can do something about this.
Right.
Whereas it was historically so bad. Which is interesting. I have to say it is. I haven't thought of it, and I'm half glad and half mad that you asked that question, Trevor. Of wouldn't Miles be kind of a hero figure in Era One, in that day and age? And I agree. I think he would, because I think that, like y'all talked about, I think there was kind of a unified, you know, entity in the whole Final Empire and how it was run, that that if his efforts were kind of unified against that, it would be viewed as good because we knew that to be so corrupt, you know. So yeah, I think you're right, but not necessarily because he is fairly heroic. It's just the system he would have been in, you know. So
and I gotta say too, if you post the hashtag Miles did nothing wrong, we can at least have a conversation about that. We can talk about it.
Can we?
I don't think so.
We talk about it. Hashtag just is wrong. We talk about it.
If you go and post another M name character did nothing wrong, I'm probably not speaking to you ever again. Just saying.
Marais.
No.
I'm trying to desperately think of another M-name character real quick. Hold on.
There aren't a lot of M-name characters, are there? Marsh. Did nothing wrong. Hashtag Marsh did nothing wrong.
Yeah. That's actually the most fascinating conversation of it all.
That actually is a conversation.
It is,
That is a conversation.
I agree.
Maybe we should have the hashtag Marsh did nothing wrong conversation at some point. But, or Marcy. I just scrolled up and saw another M name. Okay, so this whole, if Miles had been born back in the Final Empire, he would have been hero. I heard this in my audiobook while I was at work, and I remember, and I was thinking to myself, wow, that's so profound and cool. Good job, Brandon. And then I thought about it for a second. I'm like, no, it's not. Like, hold on. If he was born back in the Final Empire, when the Final Empire was abusive and destructive and oppressive, yes, of course he would have been a hero. But today, when you can battle against these issues that they're having without kidnapping women and killing constables, like, he's not a hero, and he wouldn't have been a hero back then if the circumstances had been the same. So it just kind of made me laugh that, yes, of course, if the government was as bad as it was back then, he'd be justified and be a hero, right? But now he's absolutely not. So I kind of laughed at myself.
And we should caveat that maybe a little bit as we go into the future books of, that's not an excuse to do nothing. Like, it's not saying that we shouldn't do something. We should do something. But kidnapping women and giving them to someone who we think is going to breed them, not ever okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, I have an interesting theory about Miles. You guys ready?
I'm very ready.
Yeah.
Okay. So, throughout this book, it's been well established about blood makers, right? Ferrochemy blood makers. So you're burning gold, or you're storing health in a gold copper mine, more accurately, right? And then drawing upon it to heal yourself. We spent the entire first half of this book watching Wayne do this, and it's very explicitly said, Elliot, you said this on the podcast, that's a very painful way to fight, right?
Yes.
You said, like, yeah, it's effective if you want to get shot 12 times while fighting 12 bad guys. And it is stated 4, maybe even 5 times that Miles long ago didn't feel pain anymore. Why?
Okay, so I'm going to answer this, but first I'm going to pull out, I could be wrong. I assume you're going for a, like, there's something taking his pain, like, you know, some kind
that, of... That is one way to go with it, but go ahead.
I think it's just how this, like, so it mentions that Miles is, like, basically every moment being made new, like every moment he is... being his body is being physically refreshed, he's like constantly using it, you know, almost like, I forget what the term was that they use, but
in era one
yeah, was like a
savant.
Yes, savant, that's the word for it, of he used his tin for so long that it kind of permanently almost corrupts, or it messes with you on
molds with your body.
Use it. Yeah. Yes. I feel like something like that could be at hand, where he is kind of a savant or something, because it sounds like he's just always doing it. So, but I feel like that's the end of it. I mean, maybe there's more. I'm curious to hear, but I think that's kind of the whole gist, is that he's just constantly using this and this whole compounding thing, which seems a bit wild to me. The whole compounding thing, I fully understand how it works. But I'm like, man, that's just... I'm impressed with Brandon Sanderson. I think that's a very unique thing. And that's all, I guess, you know. It's an interesting thing. So, yeah, all in all, I don't think there's anything past... he's just abusing his power all the time.
What about you, Elliot? Do you subscribe to he's a savant and that's a side effect?
that was how I was thinking about it as I was reading, was, yes, similar to Spook getting addicted to tin and it messing with him, and he's just has to burn it constantly all the time. That's what we are seeing here. I think it mentioned it along with the references of he's not feeling pain, that he has to burn that gold constantly. And right. then if he were to stop, I think the implication was that he would die. If he just simply stopped burning gold, you wouldn't even have to shoot him. He would just die because his body has become reliant on that constant healing. And I took that as simply his body is morphed along with it, and pain is not really something his body does anymore because it's so reliant on this drug of gold that it's just running on.
Follow-up question to that. We'll get to my other tangent here in a second. Follow-up question to that. Why does he live after they remove his gold? Or does he have a secret gold spike hidden in his leg somewhere?
That seemed to be what it was hinting at, was that they took him to the firing line and they had not removed the last of his gold metal mines, and that's why it took 6 volleys of firing squad to take him out, because they had to get through all the healing that he still had. So maybe that's what was keeping him alive. But I did get the feeling that maybe something a little weirder was happening there.
Right.
And if that's true, that they did get all the gold metal mines, then yeah, great question of if what I just laid out is true, and that if he stops burning that gold, he dies. Why didn't he die when they took off all the gold metal mines? So yeah, now it seems much more important whether that actually was the case or not, whether he had a gold metal mine in that moment or not.
Well, then I think it's also interesting that Iron Eyes attends his execution, maybe to make sure that he dies and make sure there's not something else at play, right? So back to Paul, what your original assumption was that I was going down here. Yes, I do think there's something directly in play here that we don't know about. Like, call it Trell, call it Hemalurgy, whatever it is, there's something going on here that either Miles was relying on to save him, because that's something Marcy notices, is that even until the end, Miles is not facing the fact that he's about to die. He's fairly confident. He's monologuing even as he has 6 rounds of bullets in him. So yes, I do think, here's my theory. I do think there is something actively taking away Miles's pain, physical pain, not necessarily emotional pain, but as we've seen previous, but physical pain. And we could talk about theories on what's going on there all day, but I think there's something more going on here than we see.
So, okay. I feel like I have some things that go with this and some things that go against it. One thing that kind of goes with it is, I guess, couldn't you make a similar-ish argument that if there is something, that it was also there for the Lord Ruler, potentially? Because I'm like, what?
What do you mean?
Because my thoughts for or against this theory are like, okay, wait. If we're on Roshar, there are things at hand which I can point to, or other things that might lean into this. Here on schedule, I feel like, having read Era 1, we know what all is in this world, in the world on schedule. And so what is possible, what is not possible, I guess you could say. And so I'm like, I don't know what could be here taking his pain. You know, is it, you know, we have Harmony. And from Era 1, we know Harmony was ruin and preservation. Are there elements of preservation or ruin in this? I'm unsure. One thing, I'm going to actually lead this into another tangent. So, whoops. so we briefly, we see Harmony here in this story for a little bit.
We do.
Really cool, and I want to talk about that more. With that, I was thinking, so Wax makes a comment. He says, basically, why would you let this happen? You know, why would you leave everyone to be kind of doomed, I guess, or if we couldn't do anything? And he's like, I didn't. I sent you here. Like, I have you here in this place to help, you know, and stuff. And so, you know, Harmony, right? No, being both ruin and preservation, as far as we know. Like, the harmony or balance, I guess, of if you have a good guy to confront the bad guys, is Harmony also fueling Miles or fueling the bad guys in our story? You know, like, not a malicious thing, but to maintain harmony, I guess, of how people work with good guys and bad guys and such, you know. That was kind of my thought. So I'm just gonna end it there. I don't know if I have anything past that, but do y'all think it could be Harmony? You know? Or is Harmony just good?
Ooh. That, I feel like that last question could be a whole topic onto itself, but I'm gonna leave that last question here alone for a second. I do think it could be Harmony. I don't think it is.
Okay.
I thought I was being silly by bringing a Moash reference into this, and then you go and actually legitimately tie him into this and get all these, you know, these lines. It feels, I don't know. There definitely could be something more going on to this, and I think we'll have to keep an eye out for that. And who might be influencing? Is it Harmony? Is it this Trell god? Or is it just more a symbolic, a similar theme in our two different stories of it is villainous to abandon your pain? That is something you should not do, is live a life where you don't feel pain. And that's something so deeply ingrained in a villain.
Hmm. Paul, you talked about it a little bit. Let's go back to it. Wax has a candid discussion with Harmony, who I think is pretty much confirmed for us is still Sazed because of the diction that he comes back with, right? So how'd you guys feel about seeing Sazed on screen? Elliot, you got your prediction incorrect. You said Harmony would not be in this book at all. You're wrong.
I was wrong. It was in a little bit. A few conversations with Wax. It wasn't huge.
He gives him like 6 guns and his mist cloak so he can look epic on the final scene. That's not nothing. I mean,
it's not nothing. He does play a pivotal role in it all. He does bring up a lot of questions. It is a lot to talk about. We didn't see him in person. Maybe that's what I was theorizing. I was probably just wrong. Here it is, Harmony.
Paul, you're a big Sazed fan. How was it?
I mean, I absolutely love Sazed, so I'm glad we got to see him. And I feel like I got the touch that I was wanting from Sazed for this book. So overall, I'm happy. So Sazed hops in and says what I briefly mentioned earlier of, you know, basically, I have you here, Wax, to help these people. Like, Wax is asking why don't you help? Why haven't you helped? Kind of thing, I guess. Wax is there, and he tells Wax that he has him there for that reason. Seems like a very Sazed-esque response and a very, you know, Harmony God-esque response. So I don't know. I was satisfied. It wasn't he wasn't the main focus of this story, like the end of Era One that you see. And that's what I expected. I wasn't expecting if he was in this to be a major part. But I'm really glad he was. I thought it was great. Yeah.
I think we've asked. Go ahead, Elliot.
I was going to go down that path a little bit further and say, yeah, maybe get back to Paul, your question you dropped of, is Harmony good? And that's not immediately apparent, because in this conversation with Harmony and Wax, I'll just go ahead and read it. It starts with Wax. I thought I asked for a little help. And a little is what you received, I think. Wax started. Well, could I have some more then, please? I must be careful in playing favorites, the voice inside his mind replied. It upsets the balance. Your God, isn't playing favorites kind of the point? No, the voice replied. The point is harmony, creating a way for as many as possible to make their own choices. I hesitated right there because I think that revealed a lot about what Sazed is trying to do, what harmony is trying to do with the world, which yeah. was one of my big questions after seeing Sazed do what he did of pick up the shards of preservation and ruin. You know, oh my goodness, what happens now? Is he going to be equally preservation, equally ruin? Is he something brand new? Is he still Sazed? Like all these big questions. That one line is an interesting insight into that. The point is harmony, creating a way for as many as possible to make their own choices. That is not prevent evil.
Right.
So I...
Yeah. That really solidifies some of my, you know, some of my questions. Because we know Sazed to be good. But what I know about harmony makes me think that it's not, quote, like, oh, harmony, like ruin and preservation are now good, but like the balance of the two. And it makes perfect sense to me that that it would be like this, that it would be where, you know, Sazed is doing his best to maintain a balance, but he has to maintain a balance. So he may do stuff that on paper I'm like, I wouldn't love for Sazed to do, but I mean, you know, this whole aspect of maintaining the balance, I guess, of between ruin and between preservation, perhaps, is interesting. So this makes me think that harmony is somehow involved, had been somehow involved with Miles.
Okay.
So, yeah, could be more than I thought.
To me, that line that you just read, Elliot, really is the complete opposite of, and maybe a direct product of, the Final Empire. Sazed grew up in the Final Empire where nobody has free will. Everything is doctored and procured by the Lord Ruler.
Yeah.
Sazed does it himself. Okay, I'm going to create utopia for you guys, and then you can make as many choices for as many people as possible. That's my goal. That seems like he's trying to be the exact opposite of the Lord Ruler, which is an interesting idea.
Yeah.
Do you guys think Wax asking the question of why don't you help? Why don't you stop what's going on? Is that a valid question, or is that not fair of him to ask?
I chuckled when Wax asked this question, because I feel like this is a big question, one of the big questions in life here in the real world. I can't tell you how many people I've had a conversation with that have said, why doesn't God step into moments of pain and sorrow and do something?
Right.
Right. It's like the quintessential, if you believe in a higher power, you got to wrestle with this question at one point, which is what Wax does here, of, you know, looking at all the things these people have done, why didn't you do something? And the answer that Harmony gives, I think, is a really good one, where he says, I have done something to help. I sent you.
Yeah.
Which I think fits with the motive we were just talking about before, of Harmony is out to let people make their own choices. So I think that maybe fits well of, he's not going to step in. Harmony's not going to step in and just magically fix it, but he might put the right person in the right place to make the right choice to fix it. Right. Perhaps.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that sentiment. That seems to be the character we're seeing, and you know, at the end of Era One, I was a big fan of Sazed, and I'm still a big fan because I feel like he's the character who can fulfill that, I guess. What do you want to call it? A character design, kind of deity design here in Sazed's character. And I feel like he upholds that very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool to see. So, yeah. Big character win in my book, I guess.
With this idea of the most people being able to make the most free will choices. What was the cryptic words in the prologue? Do you guys remember? Of the guy who holds Lessie hostage?
It's that he's seen or met with Iron Eyes. He said mm-hmm. he's seen Iron Eyes. And I don't remember right after that, but
His last words to Wax before he gets shot in the face. Someone else moves us. Lawman, someone else moves us, which is an interesting antithesis to my goal is to create the most free will for everyone.
You're absolutely right, which brings up a lot of questions. Is the whole puppeteer threat of someone else moves us, we're just the puppets, is that hinting at Harmony is a liar?
Yeah.
And Harmony says, oh, my goal is free will for everyone, but secretly actually controls everyone? Or is it a reference to there's another force out there that is acting mm-hmm. in the opposite to Harmony, of Harmony's trying to give everyone free will, and this other being, force, whatever, is doing the opposite and pulling all the strings? That might be the big question going forward.
Talking to your first possibility there, doesn't Sazed contradict himself here? If he says his goal is to make the most free will choices for the most people, and then declaring, I sent you, Wax, to handle this, implying that this whole thing was not Wax's idea, but Sazed's, to send Wax here to help.
Okay, so this, I see what you're saying, but I think this is, you know, pretty chalked up, similar to what Elliot was saying of this, like, the higher power scenario of, like, okay, so yes, Wax had free will to choose, I guess, where he goes, right? Like, he's making the decisions for where he's at right now, and things like that. But maybe Harmony had put circumstances in his life to have him like in the city instead of out in the roughs where he was, you know, something like that. That's something that I don't know that we can answer explicitly. I'm not sure. Maybe we do. Maybe Elliot knows the answer to this. But that's my understanding, is it's like the, you know, there is free will, but, you know, Harmony has, I guess, nudged pieces or made a plan for these, you know,
well,
for Wax and things like that. I'm not sure.
And here's the other piece of it too. If we should have just read this whole two pages because we're dissecting every line of it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna keep going. There's the line from Harmony that says, I have done something to help you. I sent you. Waxillium breathed out, blowing the mists in front of him. What Miles had said bothered him. And then this is like, he's remembering what Miles said, and it's in italics. Is there any doubt we've been given this for a reason? Miles' whole line, his whole motive is, I have these crazy powers. I'm supposed to do something. I was given this for a reason. I'm meant to do this. And Wax is against that. And well, no, you're not meant to do this. I'm going to stop you from doing this. But I think Wax, and I didn't realize this till we started talking about this, draws an uncomfortable parallel between Harmony saying, well, yeah, I put you here, to Miles's line, I'm here for a reason.
Yeah. And if you go back to chapter 2 of this book, as Wax is debating whether to get involved or not, he puts his earring in and has a little bit of meditation time and comes out of that meditation with the distinct feeling that Harmony wants him to pursue the Vanishers. Do you guys remember that?
Yep.
He doesn't get like spoken to by Sazed until whatever it is, chapter 19, chapter 20. But he has the distinct impression that he does and should pursue the Vanishers. Someone else moves us. Hmm, interesting. I love Miss Mortimer too, by the way.
I want to... This is going to be a whole nother rabbit trail that we should not go down, but I'm going to say it anyway. There's another character who hasn't surfaced yet and who I was expecting to surface when Wax spikes himself. I wasn't expecting Sazed. I was expecting Kelsier.
Okay.
Because we saw that, right? Uh-huh. Before you spike yourself and you get Kelsier, not necessarily Sazed. So, yeah, I don't know exactly what to go with all there, but could someone be impersonating Harmony? Ooh. Could Kelsier be impersonating Harmony? Is Wax actually talking to Harmony, or could this be somebody else? Like, those are also thoughts going in my mind. I don't know if we have enough evidence to really go down those paths yet, but those are swirling questions.
That is... The more, you know, I came into this episode being like, okay, this is a really cool into the book, but I kind of wasn't expecting.
We haven't even gotten an epilogue yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, I can't believe I let this rookie mistake slip through, but I was like, oh, it'll be more mild, you know, not that much crazy stuff. But one thing I'm thinking also is, one thing that I was thinking and then promptly forgot, apparently, sorry, I totally blinked. What we were talking about, Kelsier and spikes. Yes. Oh, yes. Okay, sorry. Okay, I'm going to restart so you can cut this out. Okay. One thing that I was thinking of with this is, okay, there's only one secret history, right? There's secret history, which we just read. This is like where I need the secret history, like behind the scenes curtain look.
You're
at
not
our
wrong.
Story at hand. Like, okay, wait, how exactly involved is Harmony? How involved are our characters here? You know, like our cognitive shadow characters, you know?
Oh, I've got it. Here's what it is, Paul. All this time, it's been Lessie, who died at the beginning, but actually became a cognitive shadow and has been influencing everything from behind the scenes. And every time he puts the earring in and talks to somebody, it's actually Lessie pulling all the strings from the cognitive realm. That's secret history,
this makes
too.
Perfect sense, because she knows Wax so well. Mm-hmm. So why else would Wax be the one like in this scenario?
And she She dies, right? So she probably has been interacting with Harmony, so she knows how to impersonate him because she's been hanging out with him in the cognitive realm, just like Kelsier hung out with Preservation for a while.
I fully believe it. Yeah. Fully believe that.
You heard it here first.
Yeah. Okay, even crazier to add to that, what if Lessie from the start was actually just the physical, you know, cognitive shadow on schedule of Mayor from
Kelsier's wife
from Era One. Yeah.
Okay.
Now we're getting wild.
Just throwing that out there, you know. One thing I have to say, I need to say with Lessie, I think Lessie is actually the most tragic backstory wife, like love interest death.
Okay.
So far in all of Brandon's.
Hold on. I think you are forgetting about the entire book of Oathbringer. Hold on.
Okay, I understand. Evie was sad, but I understand. But honestly, I think
Lessie
is more tragic.
No way.
More tragic because Wax was conscious. He wasn't taken over by the thrill. It was a mistake that he has to live with forever. Dalinar just rediscovered it. Okay, discussion over. We can move on. But I will stand up with that. That's for me. That feels the most tragic of all those moments.
Can I have a rebuttal, Your Honor, before the session is closed?
You may.
Okay, yes. So
you probably won't change my mind, but
Dalinar takes the lives of the entire city into his own hands and then accepts that responsibility at the end of the book. That's the whole point of the whole book, is accepting that pain, accepting that responsibility.
And I understand that. That makes perfect sense. And for Dalinar's character, that's great. I'm just saying the wife that I feel most, the wife and husband, I guess, that I feel most tragically for, is I feel far more like the tragicness of what happened here with Wax and Lessie than Dalinar and Evie, which is kind of wild.
Yeah, okay. We can close it there. Okay. Two other characters we need to talk about. Let's talk about the one that we're going to spend less time on. First, Mr. Suit, the man who has been employing Miles. Dun dun dun, is Wax's not dead uncle. How'd you guys feel about that?
This was another. I wasn't overly surprised by it, but I don't think about to predict it either. Not surprising in that was an off-screen death, right? And
right.
We learned a long time ago, whether you've ever watched any TV series ever or read a book by most modern fantasy authors. If there's a death off screen, 50-50 chance on whether that person's coming back. We did not see his uncle die, so to have him surprised be back was like, oh, okay, yeah, he's pulling the strings. It definitely sets a more personal tone for the next book, I think. Now it's family member versus family member, so I think it upped the stakes a bit, that reveal, I think.
I wonder what the age of Wax's aunt is, because then I might have three quarters.
Oh, of Ladrian's aunt.
Yes, Ladrian's marrying significantly younger wives.
Yeah, I don't know.
Did you have any thoughts on Mr. Suit, Paul? On my first read, I was pretty underwhelmed by this. I was like, okay, we didn't know anything about his uncle beforehand, so.
I can kind of echo that feeling. I think I'm moderately underwhelmed with this reveal.
Probably my biggest question out of that actually is, where does Wax's sister fit into all of this? Wax's sister, what is her name? I did not write that down. Tell something? Telson?
Telson? I think that's right.
I think so too.
Seems right. Telson? We'll go with it.
Telson.
Yep. Is Telson an accomplice to evil Mr. Suit Uncle, or is Telson a captive of evil Suit Uncle? Is she like in with the rest of the captured women, or is she in league with the evil uncle? That's going to be my big question.
Prediction. Put your money on one of them. Go. Both of you.
She is going to pretend to be a captive, but actually be in league with the evil uncle.
Paul.
Oh, gosh. I'm going to go the other way.
She's okay. Just
a captive.
Pretend to be in league, but actually be a captive?
I'm going to say that she's not in league. Yeah.
Okay. For the character that I believe this is correct, that when Brandon Sanderson decided to make this a series, he went back in and put this scene back in the book. Iron Eyes gives a book to Marisi, and that is how the story ends. Elliot, who is this?
This has to be, I'm 100% confident that this has to be Marsh.
which before you prove it, I would like to go back to a Mistborn Era 1 prediction that you had. And you said that it was a higher percent that Marsh was the hero of ages than he would outlive the series. And when we finished the Hero of Ages, we had the distinct question of,
yes,
where did Marsh go?
Yes.
And that wasn't even addressed, even mentioned. The brother of Kelsier was not even mentioned in Mistborn Secret History. And here we are.
Yep. That one particular prediction did not age well. Not at all.
But how do we know it's Marsh?
How do we know it's Marsh? Yes. So we talked about this for several minutes in our wrap up of Mistborn Era 1. Marsh just disappears. I went back and read a few of the pages just to confirm it. Marsh, okay, major spoilers. Hopefully you've read Mistborn Era 1. If you've not, please put down this podcast right now and go read it. Marsh is dueling with Elend. Ruin is controlling him. Vin is controlling Elend. Marsh beheads Elend. Dead. Boom. Epic moment. Vin, who is preservation, then like grabs Ruin and goes into the abyss and they kill each other. All the epic stuff. Marsh just conveniently steps off stage and does not appear. He's just gone. No Marsh. Sazed walks in, assumes preservation of Ruin. We move on to other bigger things. Marsh is never mentioned again. Super confusing. Sazed remakes the world. Marsh not mentioned. Steps onto the scene here in the epilogue of... what book were you reading? Alloy of Law. Wow. I forgot that. I was suspicious as soon as it said... what is he saying there? He says, like, you're doing my brother's work.
Yep.
Or something like that. So immediately I was going through, okay, brothers. Well, could easily be a Marsh Kelsier kind of thing. And we know Marsh was an Inquisitor, so I was suspicious already. But here's the giveaway. He's described very clearly in this scene as one of his eye sockets being crushed. Yep. And it distorting his face because the eye socket is crushed. Remember that while I go back and read a scene from The Well of Ascension. Sazed turned, slamming the lamp into Marsh's face. The metal bent in his hand, and the force threw Marsh backwards. The Inquisitor hit the marble wall, a spray of blood misting the air. As Marsh slumped to the ground, Sazed could see that he'd driven one of the ice spikes back into the front of the skull, crushing the bone around the socket. It's got to be Marsh. And then, let me read just to drive it home, just to prove that I'm right. Hero of Ages. This is actually an intriguing description. This is that scene I was describing just before where Elend and Marsh are having their epic showdown on, like, two pages later. I think Elend gets beheaded. Yeah. But here's the scene where Marsh, like, shows up. Something moved behind him, and he spun. I think this is Elend. Raising his blade, letting the Atium lead him. Yet he froze, uncertain. The creature was no Koloss. It stood in a black robe, one eye socket empty and bleeding, the other bearing a spike that had been crushed into its skull. Elend saw straight into the eye socket, through the creature's head and out the back. Marsh. That same crushed eye socket is the giveaway. Although, intriguingly, in that scene, he's missing the other spike, and there's a hole in his head that goes through. So apparently he's replaced that spike. But there's my evidence, Your Honor. This is Marsh, who is now going by the name Iron Eyes, apparently.
Well, if you'll remember, back in the Final Empire, he has the nickname Iron Eyes before he even becomes an Inquisitor.
That's right. That is ringing a bell now that you say that.
He is called Iron Eyes, and you tagged onto that of, oh, that'll mean something later, or he'll become an Inquisitor, or so something like that. Well, here we are. Yes, absolutely. That is his name moving forwards, is Iron Eyes. And Marcy in this episode, or in this chapter, even uses the name synonymous with death. They think he's the Grim Reaper. the person who meets you at death or something like that. So I think that's a very interesting use of Marsh here. So
wow. I'm just I'm very proud of once again of Elliot for his pinpointing of these specific quotes. So well done.
Do you have them on ebook, Ellie, or do you remember where these are?
I do not have them on ebook. I do have to go hunt them down, which does take a little bit of time. I tend to remember, my memory is not specific, it's general, but if I can get to the general place, I just read a few pages and find it. Like I can generally remember where things are talked about in like the scene, and then I just have to go find that scene and read it.
Fair enough. All right, we're running a little long, so let's talk about Trellism, and then we'll save Stormlight Review for next week. Elliot, you have Trellism with many exclamation points in the outline. What have you found?
I have found some things, although not maybe as definitive as I would like. I promised you quotes from three Mistborn Era 1 books. I've knocked out two of that, so here I'll fill in with a third one. Although, actually, I'm going to read a Hero of Ages quote super quick first. Trellism. Miles has mentioned this a couple times. He follows Trell. He delivers like a final curse, if you will, at the end of this book. Let me actually read that first, because
it's important.
Yeah, very, very important.
It's important.
So Miles is facing the firing squad. He apparently thinks he's not going to die, maybe, but they come at him. Here's what he yells. You are fools. One day the men of gold and red, bearers of the final metal, will come to you, and you will be ruled by them. And then the next time he opens his mouth, he says, worship. Worship Trell and wait. And then has a rather gruesome, what we think is his death after that. I feel like every single word of that is extremely important. The men of gold and red, bearers of the final metal, you will be ruled by them. Worship Trell and wait. It did ring a bell, this whole Trell thing. It's like, I know we've heard that before. So I went back looking for it, and it's one of the religions that Sazed had in his very long list. He spends all of Hero of Ages, if not part of Well of Ascension 2, going through religions, trying to figure out where the truth is. And let me read a couple of my quotes here, which will hopefully tie this together. At the end of Hero of Ages, Kelsier reshapes... I'm not reading this, it's my thought still. Sazed reshapes Scadrial. He puts everything back that the Lord Ruler and Vin couldn't do. And he uses a lot of the information from the religions that he gathered to do this. So in this scene here, at the very end of Hero of Ages, is kind of Sazed thinking through everything he knows and using that information to correct Scadrial. Here's what he's thinking. We're just in Sazed's head. There had been a people known as the Nelizzans. No idea if I'm pronouncing that right, but we'll go with it. Nelizzans. They had worshipped the stars, had called them the thousand eyes of their god Trell, watching them. Sazed remembered well offering the religion to the young Vin while she had sat captive undergoing her first haircut with the crew. From the Nelizzans, the keepers had recovered star charts and had dutifully recorded them, even though scholars had called them useless since they hadn't been accurate since the days before the ascensions. Yet from these star charts and from the patterns and movements of the other planets in the solar system they outlined, Sazed could determine exactly where the world was supposed to sit in orbit. Let me flash back to the Final Empire, because I promised you a quote from there, to read that scene where he shares that religion with Vin, because we get a little bit even more there. I think I have the perfect religion for you, Sazed said, his normally stoic face revealing a glimmer of eagerness. It is called Trellogism, after the god Trell. Trell was worshipped by a group known as the Nelizzans, a people who lived far to the north. In their land, the day and night cycle was quite odd. During some months of the year, it was dark for most of the day. During the summer, however, it only grew dark for a few hours at a time. The Nelizzans believed that there was beauty in darkness, and that the daylight was more profane. They saw the stars as the thousand eyes of Trell watching them. The sun was the single jealous eye of Trell's brother, Nalt. Since Nalt only had one eye, he made it blaze brightly to outshine his brother. However, the Nelazans were not impressed and preferred to worship the quiet Trell, who watched over them even when Nalt obscured the sky. I'm not exactly exactly sure what to pull out of all of that, but that was a lot of information. We at least have some context for who Trell is, might be associated with stars, associated with darkness and not light, is jealous of Nalt, the sun god, apparently. And I noted the line in there of they specifically worshipped Trell, like carefully, so as not to anger Nalt, the sun god. Where do we go with all this information? I'm not quite sure. But I'm sure it's going to be important going forward, since we just got this big old threat of they're coming for you. You better start worshiping Trell. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely did not tune in near enough to the Trell talk in the previous era.
Well, it was kind of, it was buried, right? Because Sazed is constantly. It
absolutely was.
You know? There's a dozen other scenes just like that I could have read about another random religion with silly beliefs or whatever superstitions. So there's no way you could have picked it out in your reading of the first era, but now in the second era, it seems to have maybe become extremely important all of a sudden.
And just as a quick aside, Miles, in his internal dialogue in these chapters, believes that he's created by Trell. Not Harmony, not something else. He believes he's created by Trell, which is an interesting idea.
And it leads to weird thoughts or theories, right? Because as far as we know, okay, when we're talking about gods, we're Cosmere aware enough to immediately go to shards, right? When we think of big G gods or little G gods or however you want to think about it, there's 16 of them in the universe and we know most of them. And on Scadule specifically, as far as we know, there's only two, Preservation and Ruin, who have now been melded together into Harmony. So are we talking about a shard god? Are we talking about a different being? Like what has the ability to create humans or drive magic or come and take over the world that's not a shard? Or is it a shard?
And if it is a shard, what's its actual name, right? Because Trell doesn't fit into the actual, like, you know, historical names that we have. I have answers for you, but I'm not going to give them to you. Anything else, gentlemen?
That was rude.
Hey, I haven't sat in this chair since, like, The Way of Kings, when you guys are just starting a series. And I have all the answers because I just read all of Mistborn Era 2, and to properly prep as opposed to improperly prep like I did for Era 1. So I have all the answers again, and it's fun.
We will unravel your secrets. You cannot stop us.
I wish they were my secrets. I did not come up with them.
Coming for you, Brandon. We're going to unravel all your secrets, which I guess is the whole point, right? Read and find out.
And it comes full circle.
Wow.
Alrighty. We will conclude there. We are jumping right into Shadows of Self. Next week, prologue through chapter 3, I think. Hold on. Let me verify that before we close the episode. Prologue to chapter 4. Of Shadows of Self for next week. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
See ya again next time.
Bye.